Hello. Welcome to another of Stuart Wilde's Books on Tape. In this audio program, Stuart reads his book, Life Was Never Meant to Be a Struggle. Now here's Stuart Wilde.
Life was never meant to be a struggle, just a gentle progression from one point to another, much like walking through a valley on a sunny day. Chapter 1, The Struggler's Hall of Fame. Do you remember as a child being told that if you wanted to make it in life, you would have to work hard, that life involved pain and struggle, that you would have to earn love and acceptance, and that you would have to put in an incredible effort just to come out on top? I certainly remember my mother saying to me, struggle ennobles the soul. Yet who says this is true? Look at nature. It expends a certain effort in sustaining itself, but it does not struggle. Does the tiger in the forest get up in the morning and say, I'll struggle like crazy today, and hopefully by supper time I'll get something to eat? No way. It just rises, has a little sniff under its tiger armpits, or does whatever tigers do at breakfast time, and heads out. At noon, there on the path is lunch, provided courtesy of the Great Spirit. Okay, the last 30 yards involves the tiger in a bit of rushing about, but that can hardly be construed as struggle. You two may have to cross town to pick up a check, but there's a great difference between struggle and effort. Our physical condition as humans involves effort, but struggle is effort laced with emotion and desperation. Think of this. If you accept full responsibility for your life, then you will accept that your destiny is created by you, and that your life is basically a symbol of your innermost thoughts and feelings, what you believe about yourself. Now, if over a period of years you've laid down a couple of 100,000 thoughts in your subconscious that say, life is a struggle, then naturally you would project that from your inner feelings. Even if you are not necessarily consciously aware of that aspect of your inner self, the thought would still lay deep within you, and it would still show up constantly in your life. Whenever a project starts to flow too well, or things become too easy, your inner self emits an energy that says, warning, warning, this is too simple. Let us self-destruct this project or relationship and come at it the hard way, so that we can experience circumstances that are congruent with our inner belief that life is a struggle. So things fall apart, and you feel like you're trying to push a peanut up Everest with your nose. Eventually, once you've suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune for a while, the inner self pulls to you a watered-down version of circumstances that would have been yours anyway, weeks ago, and without effort. This booklet helps you identify struggle, discover the reasons for it, and eliminate it. But first, let us look at some of the characters in the Struggler's Hall of Fame. I'm sure you will have fun recognizing them from among your friends and acquaintances.
The hero.
Men like struggling, but then so do some women. The male version goes something like this. If I bust a gut and hurtle around trying hard, people will see me as a good man, and they will treat me with respect. Whether I get results or not matters little as long as I'm seen to be making a valiant effort. To make sure everyone acknowledges my heroism, I will create an entire theater of frantic action, hectic schedules, meetings of earth-shattering importance, long hours, and constant pressure. Of course, this pantomime will make me a bit tense, but that is all part of the act, for the tension will be seen by others as my taking responsibility, and they will love and respect me for that, won't they?
If the truth be known, the answer is no.
In fact, anyone with any perception will see this male is a complete idiot. His weakness, namely, a lack of personal acceptance, stands out a mile. He has cast his fate to sacrifice in the hope of winning affection or acknowledgement. His frantic actions only serve to underline that he's out of control and does not really have a clue about what he is doing. Another common struggler is the terrorist type. This fellow, because he is uncomfortable with himself, finds that he is unable to deal with society. Either he was born disadvantaged, or he has never been accepted, or he bears a grudge of some kind. Because of this, he has to operate outside of society, and he finds it hard to accept anyone's help. He struggles through 101 projects that never quite come off. And even if he makes the success of a relationship or a project, it will seem to him a hollow victory. For what he wants is acceptance,
not success, so he will usually self-destruct his successes and move on to struggling at something else. If the terrorist ever finds himself within the mainstream, for example, if he gets a job in a corporation, he will find fault with that situation, sneer at it, and attempt to change or destroy it. Usually his actions will threaten those around him, and sooner or later he'll be tossed out. Because the terrorist has to fight the system rather than use it, he never gets what he wants. No one supports him. If he does find someone who loves and accepts him, he disregards that and focuses instead on all those aspects of non-recognition that are a part of his life. The third type of struggler is the professional wimp. This person is so weak and lacking in his ability to command life, he allows everyone to tow him around by the nose. It makes him angry, and he will protest his rights from a position that he feels is logically just. Yet his struggle results from weak energy, and he gets nowhere and no one cares. There is a variation on this theme, the spiritual wimp. This character has a huge ego and feels that God dropped him off on earth so that he could sit around being special. He is usually so holy that he cannot soil his hands with life. He expects people to treat him like a god and honor him anyway. Usually he struggles like crazy, for people find it hard to accept his lifestyle, and his failure threatens them. One of the common female archetypes,
the goddess,
is similar to the male. She plays a game called Please Accept Me, For I Am Great. I'm really a goddess, and I'm as strong, if not stronger, than any male. To act out her pantomime, she dresses up in male clothes, drives fast cars, gets super aggressive to make up for her lack of confidence, and she, too, hurtles out and plays the achiever's game of her male counterpart. In truth, being a goddess is hard work, for you constantly have to sustain a celestial pose. Usually others will not see you as a goddess, and so you expend energy in the hope of convincing them. By trying to emulate the male, what the female is actually saying is, I know I am weaker. This is, of course, not true, for most women are spiritually stronger than males, if only they would realize it. Another female character has a play called Wilting Wallflower. It goes like this. I'm just a helpless little person. I am weak and don't understand life. I can't add figures or mend a fuse. My emotions are all over the parking lot. Please save me. Please look after me. That way I can sit someplace and do nothing much. This works to a certain extent, for sooner or later the lifesaver type shows up to assist her. The problem is that the lifesaver, be they male or another female, will only save the wallflower once or twice. Then they move on, for there's nothing in it for them. As the wilting wallflower plays out her act, it gets harder and harder for her to feel any self-worth. Sooner or later, that lack of self-worth pulls her to people that would delight in manipulating her. A spiral of struggle is self-perpetuating, for in order for her to get the attention she craves, she has to create more and more dramatic scenarios of helplessness. Eventually, she drifts into playing victim. You all know the type. When you meet her, she pours out a litany of disasters. There's nothing you can do for her, for she's not asking for help. She just wants you to commiserate. Quite often, you will want to punch her on the nose just to keep her happy. What do all these characters have in common? First of all, they're all pretty stupid. They're playing out the facets of their personalities, which are not truth. Yet, with just a small adjustment in attitude, they could move from struggle into flow. You have to work hard at creating struggle, whereas flow is a natural condition that comes from accepting yourself and watching your life so that it is reasonably balanced most of the time. Chapter 2, Identifying Struggle. Because struggle is a programmed response and natural to many, we quite often find ourselves struggling without realizing that we are doing so. The first step in reducing struggle in your life is to identify it. If you've read my book Affirmations, you may remember I suggested that you take time to go into every aspect of your life and evaluate what you get out of it in relation to what you put in. I ask you to plug in the struggleometer, a mythical device created by your mind to gauge the levels of struggle you exert. The main areas you review are 1. Your physical body, 2. Your emotional balance, 3. Your relationships, 4. Your physical living circumstances, 5. Your finances, 6. Your attitude to the world around you, 7. Your ability to handle conflict, 8. Your ability to handle stress, 9. Your psychological state, 10. Your spiritual balance. 1. your physical body. If your body is weak, it is either a genetic problem or an imbalance created by you. If your weakness is genetic, you can change your attitude from poor me to one of strength by realizing that your weakness is a gift. It allows you to express power in spite of your condition. It is like having one or two oarsmen in your boat and no oar for them. So what? The boat can make it anyway. A bit slower perhaps, but it will get there, and the extra time it takes will allow you to enjoy the journey more fully. If your weakness is not genetic, fix it, or at least express the most energy that you can towards healing your body so that it does not dominate your life. As you put in real effort in healing your body, the rise in energy that comes from that inspires you to go further. You'll become happier and more balanced. 2. Your emotional balance. Emotional turmoil is another programmed response. As children, we're taught to cry out to get what we want, and sometimes we carry that over into life. If I create enough fuss, will you love me? Your reaction to an emotional situation is just your opinion. It is not necessarily truth. In any given situation, you can react dispassionately or otherwise as you wish. Train yourself to be more forgiving of yourself, more detached, and you will see your life in an infinite sense, not in a finite sense. Everything becomes a lesson, a way of strengthening you. Gauge the level of your emotional rage. Everyone has it. If it comes up within you, do something positive to release it at once. Communication usually works. Also, avoid conflict. Remember, only the fool stands and fights. The sage walks away. It is pointless to get your knickers in a twist if a certain person fails to react the way you want. It's best to avoid people and situations that you know drive you crazy. Remember to vote with your feet. If a situation is untenable or unchangeable, walk away. 3. Your relationships. Through relationships, we learn about ourselves because people around us reflect back to us what we are. That is why many relationships are hard. If your relationship causes you to struggle, ask yourself why. What opinion do you hold about the relationship or yourself that causes it not to go the way you want? What are you trying to push against? What is your level of giving and receiving? Are you allowing yourself to be ripped off? And if you are, is that okay, or do you want to change that? 4. Your living circumstances. Are your circumstances designed to nurture you? Do they support you? Or are you at the mercy of circumstances? If so, what are you going to do about it? What is the level of struggle here? For example, does the home you live in take so much effort to maintain that you get out of it less than you put in? 5. Your finances. The question here is not, do you have enough money? Rather, is your life contained and balanced within whatever money you do have? If not, you will usually find yourself struggling as you try to maintain a lifestyle that your ego personality feels it needs, which perhaps your current energy is not able to sustain. 6. Your attitude to the world around you. Your life, your evolution, is your business. What others do is their business. If you let the world affect how you feel, what you're saying is, I do not make my own decisions. I just react in a Pavlovian response to anything that may twang my emotions. Are you struggling to fix the world? If so, why? It's a bit of an ego trip when people think that they can fix things. If you can see the world as an infinite evolution, the way God would see it, you would know that it is more or less perfect and does not need fixing. It is only when we view the world within the finite context of our emotions that it looks less than perfect. You can instantly become happy and free by deciding to leave the world alone and concentrate instead on yourself. 7. Your ability to handle conflict. Conflict is always just a divergence of opinions. Are you struggling to convince others that your opinion is right? And if you are right, so what? To win a moral victory at the expense of your sanity is dumb. 8. Your ability to handle stress. In a crowded world with all the obligations we take on, stress is natural. Do you react emotionally or unemotionally to stress? Do you understand how to handle it? Some top-notch strugglers like to create stress so they can feel excitement in their life. They live on their adrenals. You don't have to go bananas to have fun or feel that life is exhilarating.
9. Your psychological state. If your psychological state causes you anguish, it will be either a byproduct of your physical state or, once more, opinion. How much of each applies to you? 10. Your spiritual balance. Balance is natural. Whenever you have to force something to happen, you come off balance to do so. How much do you exist in the flow and how much do you have to push? The difference between a spiritual person and a person who's less evolved is that the spiritual person is real. He lives within the truth of the inner self, what I call the higher self. He does not play games. He doesn't have to make excuses. He can say with conviction, I am what I am. He realizes that he's neither all-knowing nor perfect, and he's happy with that. Because people are generally weak, they tend to be phony and play out a character in a play who is not themselves, who is not truth. So they struggle to maintain a Jekyll and Hyde existence, one that the ego personality says has to be maintained, and another which is what they really are. Often they will be so settled within their minds that they will not realize what the higher self within is telling them, and so will see the fake character as real and will struggle to maintain that. Their efforts and lifestyle become so fragmented that everything they try to achieve becomes a painful grind. Chapter 3, The Struggler's Hit Parade. Below are listed 11 of the most common reasons or aspects of struggle. The Struggler's Hit Parade. Do any apply to you? If so, let us look at that. In the next section, I will give you a powerful action plan to go beyond that. Strugglers crave acceptance. Most strugglers have low self-esteem. This causes them to seek constantly the acceptance and approval of others. Yet the acknowledgement they seek is rarely forthcoming and is usually dissatisfying even when they get it. This causes frustration. By lacking identity, a sense of knowing or accepting who they are, they shift their attention from what is real inside of them to the symbols of life, which are not real, outside of them. They see the things around them as confirmation of their being okay, rather than confirm who they are within themselves. Thus, life for them is a struggle to sustain a status that is fake, and no amount of baubles or bangles will keep this struggler happy, for acquisitions have only short emotional shelf lives. If the struggler buys, say, a new yacht, he can say, "Please accept me because I own this yacht." He's excited for a while as he plays out the theater of yachting. But sooner or later, the emotional pleasure of the yacht drains away, and he then has to go find something else to fill his acceptance needs. If by any chance life does not go the way that the struggler wants, he gets mad and frustrated because now he is detached from his confirming symbols. He not only feels worthless, but also does not have the confirmation he constantly craves. Strugglers often have big egos. Strugglers usually have big egos because they allow their ego personality to talk them into greater opinions of themselves than they can sustain. It has to be exaggerated because they do not believe or see worth in what they are. So naturally, to compensate for that, they will exaggerate life in the hopes that at least some of it will come off. You're a divine spirit within a body, and you're a finite ego personality. The divine spirit or higher self knows the direction in which it is headed and has most of the power, the inner power. The ego holds the outer power. When your ego personality is going in the same direction as is the higher self, things flow. But if the ego personality is off in another direction, struggle ensues. Remember, spirituality is being real, living in the truth. The ego personality lives in a variation of the truth, which is its opinion.
This concludes Side A. Please stop the tape and turn it over to continue the program on the other side.